Alexandru, the floor is yours.
Well, it's a little arcane topic here. I don't know if I'm talking about the past, or I'm talking about the future in terms of inflation, so it depends on which country you're based. But this is a demand of some countries in my jurisdiction. So basically, the GLASS, the group of Latin American standard setters, comprises 17 countries, and some countries are arguing for reform in the IS 29 on inflation account. Well, I have a presentation here in a paper, but I'll try to summarize it on two main points which are being addressed. The first one is this IS 29 define inflation treatment that applies to hyperinflationary economies. And these are defined, or at least the common acceptance of the definitions is that are those economies, hyperinflationary economies, are those economies which have more than 100% of inflation accumulated over 3 years. So that's the main point. People consider that threshold to be too broad, so, and suggest a change of it. Just for the sake of suggestion, they suggest to go for 26% over 3 years, which basically is 8% a year, but it can be 25, so it's just a suggestion that this threshold should be dramatically reduced. Because when you have 8% over 3 years, well, anything that's represented in your balance sheet is going to be distorted, especially things that are represented on a historical cost basis. A few countries in the region, Brazil is not included, are operating with double digits inflation rates, and they are complaining that they have a lot of demand for restatement of the financials. So this is the main question. The first main demand is, well, before discussing the content of this standard or a proposed standard to change the threshold, and threshold should be, or to eliminate the threshold, simply, and let to maybe to companies or to regulators to decide. But when the other four criteria, because they have a five criteria model, and 100% is one of the criteria, but this 100% is generally considered by auditors and others as being mandatory. So you must have at least 100% over 3 years. So another option is just to exclude it and leave the qualitative aspects of the threshold. Just to give an example, they start to say, well, when the general population prefers to keep its wealth in non-monetary assets or in foreign denominated assets. So don't believe that 100% or 70% would change that. So this threshold is a little bit arbitrary. So one suggestion is to put it on 25%, 26% over 3 years, and another suggestion is just eliminate it and leave to companies or to regulators to decide when to impose this standard. Okay, so that's the first one. So it's about the threshold. The second demand is actually more related to the contents of the standard. And there is a general preference of jurisdiction in the region to adopt what they call an integral method of adjustment. Just remember the current method does not take inflation to account in all asset and liability items, just few of them, a part of it. You just consider that, for example, assets which are represented by current amounts, for example, a financial instrument, which is a fair value, should not be adjusted for inflation, which seems reasonable, but it's not. Because let's say an instrument that has 100 monetary units at a given point in time, you have fair value, and another after a period, it still has 100 monetary units of fair value. Say, well, there was no gain or loss. Yes, but if the inflation during the period was 25%, and this asset have the same fair value that has 1 year ago, you actually had a loss of 25%. So the fact that a financial instrument, for example, is measured at fair value at current prices or occurring, that doesn't mean that inflation should not be accounted. Well, you could argue that in the balance sheet, the amounts are correct, of course, because they are denominated on current amounts. But in terms of income representation, it lacks substance, because obviously you have loss on assets and liabilities which are represented at fair value. The same happens in the liability side of it. So they are proposing to use an integral method which takes into account every asset and every liability in the statement of financial position to generate gains or loss. This method has been applied in some jurisdictions. For example, in Brazil, it has been applied during the 80s. The Brazilian method basically converts every transaction at the point in time that it happened to a given monetary index, and then you could generate gains or losses in those monetary and non-monetary items in the same way. So it has been applied. So it is possible to be applied. It's operationally feasible, and it's generally considered. Even the UN has recommended in the past to countries in hyperinflationary situations. So these are basically the main demands. One is to change the threshold. So maybe you can change the wording too. So it is over 100% is hyperinflationary economies, and below 100% and over a given threshold going to be considered inflationary economies, and their standard could be applied for those economies. And the other one is related to just integral method. The point is, at the moment, is companies in those countries with, for example, 80% of inflation are trying to apply the standard and say, no, you cannot apply that and call IFRS. So it results in a very, very, very uncomfortable situation. So I believe that I'm not going to the details of this integral method, because it's in the paper, but it's the idea is quite simple. You recognize gains or losses on every transaction on a monthly basis. So in Brazil it was on a daily basis, but well, we got 80% of inflation a month in the 80s, but obviously it's not
that bad.
Sorry?
It wasn't that bad. It was bad, but not
80%
per month.
80% a month. 2008.
Yes.
Yeah, it was 2000% a year.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Yeah, so you know that. and these are the two main demands. It's not really to currency translation, okay? It's not talking about a foreign denominated adjustment. What you have in Brazil is the government uses it to publish, to release every day what they call the unity of account, which is reflecting inflation on a daily basis. Well, it can be done. Brazil is an interesting case of the economy that worked and functioned during a hyperinflationary economy, which is quite rare. So companies continue to produce, the restaurants are open. So what we did, Russ asked me, well, what about the bills, the notes? Well, every 2 or 3 years, we end there and cut 3 zeros, you know what I mean? So, and then cut 3 zeros and keep cutting it, and even the bills remain the same, but you have to cut it from 3 zeros and allow them to stay in circulation for some time. So it was not as dramatic as it could be. And most people recognize it as having a good indexing system is something very important to do in this process. Other people argue that perpetuates inflation. Okay, that's a system to perpetuate inflation. And this is an argument normally used by the economists to say, well, that perpetuates. Brazilians learn to live with inflation. That's why it lasts for 20 years. So if people are losing their jobs and losing the house and not be able to buy food, it will not be last for 20 years. But well, that's open to argument. There are a few doctoral theses on that. But that's the demand. It's not a strong point in Brazil at the moment. I have to confess, people are not quite concerned about it because inflation in Brazil is up 4%, 5% a year. But it's getting hot in the region. And that's it. So I can't go into the details of the method, but I don't think this. So and what we are demanding that, well, first of all, change the threshold, and then start a project to consider the integral method. But if you cannot start a project, so if you change the threshold, it's okay. It's
that could be easier.
Yeah.
Just changing the threshold is not such a big deal.
Changing the threshold is a first, and allow the integral method, because the wording here is not good. They say that you cannot correct, say that is a all the assets are non-monetary, and say that you in. Say, malabarist, and they are not stated. They should let companies to decide to have the option to restate all their assets and liabilities if the inflation rate.
Can I ask you a quick question? I'm just trying to get my head around it. If it is a monetary asset, then what you'd effectively do is you'd restate it for inflation. That'd give rise to a profit or loss or gain or deficit. And then you would reprice it either through a fair value through a fair value mechanism or through an impairment mechanism to get back to the monetary value. So you have a profit and then a loss, or a loss and then a profit. Is that correct?
When this method was used in Brazil, it didn't have that many assets at fair value.
Yep.
And that's what one discussion about how we're going to account for it. This is one option. The other option is do everything you have to do. On a current basis, so do the impairment comparing to the current value. For example, a machine was the cost was 100, and then I do an impairment and I realize that now it is priced at 80. And in that case, you probably will not have any gain or losses on based on inflation, because this impairment method would have a coincidence with the inflation. So it's possible to have a coincidence. Okay, but it's one option to do this, to do everything on a monetary base on the same level, the same price level, and then consider the impairment. Another alternative is do the impairment in your original curve, and then try to correct for monetary. But probably you have the amounts to be similar.
So it's a P&L allocation issue. Is that really what we're saying?
Yeah, it's a P&L allocation. We use in Brazil to allocate that on a separate line. So, and to open it and say this is the my gains and gains from PPE, gains from monetary assets, gains from non-monetary assets, and these are the losses from that and then that. There was a footnote. Getting quite sophisticated that, you know, it's a long time doing this.
That's where I was also trying to get to, because that sounds like a much simpler solution than what I thought you might be going initially.
Yeah.
Because your balance sheet is going to reflect the correct value of the, and it's simply how you wind that through the income statement.
Yeah, exactly. That's the main point. The balance sheet will reflect the current value. The thing is, did I had a gain or a loss, inflationary loss during this period? And to separate what is inflationary gain or loss from the pure impairments in the sense.
Or the fair value.
A security is easy to see. Right? If you have a security that was valid at 100 and then one year after is still valid at 100 and say, well, the inflation was 20% in that year, you say, well, I had an inflationary loss of 20. That's clear. Well, no, but the fair value was 110. Then I have an inflationary loss of 10. So, and then market to market of. It's a way to present it. So I think that's not a deal breaker how to present it. But the important thing is to represent, not to accept that assets and liabilities which are portrayed at fair value are free from inflationary bias.
Are free from reflecting the income statement effect.
Yeah.
Of
that's we believe, and I personally believe too, is a conceptual mistake. Especially if you look at the income statement, you have gain and losses from those assets, even if they are at fair value.
And you don't think the existing standard gives you enough wiggle room to actually do that?
So, sorry, could you say again?
you don't think the existing standard actually gives you enough wiggle room to actually...
No, no, it's that because of the wording. Most people interpret that you cannot do it and call it IFRS. So if you do that, you are disobeying the order here. If you change this and say, well, you should that in certain circumstances, should that when it's material, should that when it's relevant, I don't know the word, you're not care about it, but this flexibility should be open.
I mean, it sounds like both of the issues you've raised may actually be potentially interpretation. So the 100% being an absolute rule might not necessarily have been in that.
Let me just disagree, because I never seen an alternative interpretation. 100% of auditors and 100% of people that I said, it is so, if it's an interpretation thing, you guys should say something, because it's so well established that 100% is the threshold, and because of paragraph 14.
And I do think it's very high. Hmm? I mean, it is a very high threshold, too high.
Late.
Huh?
Late.
Yeah.
Late in the game.
But the question is if it is not a threshold, if I could apply this standard with a lower number, I believe something should be said, because people are quite I tried that before.
So that would be, I mean, that we could do easily.
But that seems like an easier, and the presentation issue seems like an easier solution.
Alexander, question. Sorry.
Yeah.
Based on your research report on page 8, there are 46 countries that their inflation rate is more than 26. But there are only 4 countries their inflation rates are more than 100%, over 3%.
Yeah.
So if you, anyway, in any reason, you know, if we change this new threshold, the 46 countries will be
affected.
Effective. Yep. So it's a huge change, because it's only 4 countries based on your data.
Yep.
But I don't know, maybe this is a 2005 or 2007, yeah, but now it's still the same situation?
No, it's obviously it changes. So it from 46 it became 32, or I don't know the current,
right,
the current number, but it obviously is 10% of the total is over 100%. Another argument that I have to give to you is, when your inflation level in a given year amounts to 15%, your expectation is not that the economy, the public finances will go into the right track. Normally, when it goes, normally is a growing process that gains momentum. When you got 15 in 1 year, normally what happens the next year that you get is that you have 25. So most of the jurisdictions that we talk said, well, it's like alcoholism. It's not something that go back. It's something that normally when you got 15%, it goes up soon.
Yes, I understand. But could you give us some more the reason why you chose the 26%?
No, as I said, 26% is not a. It's just a suggestion.
It's just a
suggestion. We do not have a science.
They'll settle for 30.
Yeah. We do not have a science for it. I have to be honest.
Where I'd sort of thought you almost were suggesting it earlier was that we would use the 5 criteria we have, but make each of those criteria, let's say, equally weighted. So a high number, not necessarily 26%, not necessarily 30%, accompanied by these other things. What I was going to ask, and I thought it was where Chung Wu was going actually, was, is there general acceptance that high single-digit inflation requires this change? So would you say if we went to these 46 countries that are on the list, would they agree that the high single-digit is enough?
I talked to a friend of mine who did his PhD on that, and what he was telling me is that why there is an inflation target, the inflation targeting became so popular in the first place, is that because of the belief that once you break a certain target, which is, this target is not science, can be 4%, can be 5%, can be 6% in some countries, it normally affect people's expectations. And then it appears a phenomenon called inflation inertia, which means that inflation becomes inertial. So people start to price things considering inflation. And then the phenomenon is very hard to stop. And there is a lot of debate if this number is 5% or 6%. So central banks in the world, you can see they all range between some levels. And I think the most flexible ones go for six and something. And the idea is that after that, people start to, for an irrational expectations concept, to incorporate inflation. So if you want if you think it's on high single digits, those I'm not aware of any single central bank in the world that allows two-digit inflation as the upper limit. They say that at that point, if you have a double digits or high single digits, the process is very hard to be controlled. So you have to act it quite before.
So to think if we can...
That's why the 8 is considered. If you can, 8 over 3 years gap the 26, and the people start to say, well, 8 is considered... I'm not justifying, it's no science, okay? But 8 is considered to be already too much.
No, but the question should be, when does historic costs become obviously irrelevant?
Yeah, that's it.
At what level of inflation doesn't it tell you anything anymore? Well, certainly with 100% over 3 years, but 25% over 3 years is also, you know, then your balance sheet becomes very shaky.
Yeah. The question that we learned from the economists is that normally when you reach 8% in a year, it's a signal that the next year will probably, in most of the cases, be worse than 8%. So it signals a lack of control. I agree with Hans' point, is that's the question, but the thing is not to wait over 3 years, because after 3 years, probably there's nothing you can do anymore, so it's...
In part, it seems to suggest that what we should be trying for is, rather than a numerical target that says 8%, we should be trying to identify those factors you're talking about, because those factors might be different in different economies.
Yeah.
An economy that is highly reliant on fuel imports may find that inflation in a high fuel year goes up, but they expect that it'll come down in later years. So you're looking for those types of indicators.
What you're saying is that what economists in Brazil say, there are different kinds of inflation.
Yep.
There are supply and demand inflations which are reversible over time, and there is inflationary inertia.
Yep.
And the inflationary inertia is not reversed naturally. So it doesn't matter if the fuel prices drop, the inflation will have, because people are already adjusting the system. So they split inflation onto there are many reasons, but these are the main reasons: supply and demand effects and inertia effects.
Did your group have a look at whether perhaps a disclosure option might be better? Because it seems to no matter what threshold you have, it's quite a big switch to all of a sudden change your measurement basis for all of your assets that are not at current values. And there's also a notion that there's nothing much in here that tells you about capital maintenance per se, because in a sense you've got a split between showing which parts of the profit are because of inflation, and that's actually not really profit. Arguably that's not profit at all. That should be adjusting your opening equity to show that that's actually just maintaining the status quo. So it's quite a big switch to change all the measurement basis. And then, of course, and I actually had a look back through the 70s, and I think most of the world would have been in and out of this process at 8% as well. Then you've got to come back down, and then all of a sudden you've left your numbers at some other notional amount. I wondered whether there was something, because you stayed in the paper on page 5, there's a section in there saying whether you can do, with an approximation, a pretty high level of precision of adjusting. So if you kind of know what the general adjustments, which numbers are in there at a particular amount, couldn't you do a disclosure that shows almost a statement, even today, without even applying IAS 29 today, what the effect of inflation is? And you could do general inflation, or you could do specific to the entity, for example, because I'm assuming that different commodity prices will change at different levels. And so this is a very blunt tool.
Yeah.
But my worry is, once you get into this, you're changing all your measurement attributes, and then you've got to get out of it again.
These are two things that have been widely discussed. The first one is which index to use. Obviously, inflation changes from sector to sector, and from even to from company to company, so it depends a lot of it. And obviously, it would be better to have specific indexes, but obviously, for practical reasons, these indexes are not available in the first place. most of those countries. So it became a question of practicability. So it's not something that you can actually have in the first. So it's not easily to be implemented. So the second thing is people reject strongly the idea of a disclosure supplement because of obviously in a disclosure supplement you solve one of the aspects that inform investors, but then you have all the contractual use of accounting for covenants and for all other needs which will not be solved by additional disclosure. So what people are asking is to really to incorporate that on the basic financial statement. There is a strong discussion. I disagree with you about conceptually on this, if it is not income or not, if it is income or not. There's some strong Edwards and Bell discussion about what is income or what is not income. But I believe it's a little bit beyond the point here. Because the standard already exists, already asking you to do that. The situation is just put it to fair value items and then to change the threshold. What I mean, the concept of law already exists. If there is a concept of law, it already exists because the standard is already here. So it's not new.
Another question too about, I'm assuming this is mainly about reporting within a jurisdiction, within that functional currency. Because the question I have, I've got to work through the numbers, both I'm head on paper, but if you assume that exchange rates actually are correlated with inflation, which is one of the strongest theories we do have, you would expect to see, even though as prices go up, for example, so the numbers can become inflated, as the currency deflates essentially because of that. If you've got a foreign investment in there, my question is whether or not you end up double counting in a sense. I've got to work through. So.
Yeah, it is one of the most flawed arguments in economics that exchange rates in the long run follow inflation. So Brazil is the best example. We have more or less the same exchange rate today that we have 20 years ago. And obviously the inflation rate in Brazil is not zero at the moment. So it is easily, this is not a valid assumption. So Brazil against US dollar is 2.4 today and is more or less what is it was four years, and let me say after the real plan that happened 20 years ago. So, well, obviously you have a lot of inflation after it. So the exchange rate is polluted with many other things like expectations about the future or the macroeconomic imbalances. It is it's maybe in the long run, no, but not on the 1 year.
And even if that was true, it wouldn't help the P&L. Because any of that deflationary loss goes through OCI, it doesn't go through the P&L. So actually, you, unless you had this adjustment, you would be taking a hit in the P&L for the inflationary losses.
Yeah, last year the situation in Argentina was the exchange rate developed much less than the inflation, so it was showed. Completely different numbers. So maybe in the long, but long run means a really long time.
Any other comments or questions?
Not a very popular topic.
Well, I think it does raise some important issues, and that clearly the 100% threshold is just not not a realistic number.
Yeah, I think we should take a look at it and see if we can do something simple.
Is IAS 29 the right answer though? Because there's one thing opening up the threshold, but threshold into, you know, some of the feedback I got is, well, yeah, not into IAS 29. And then there will be the second question: if you're going to go down to 8%, why don't we just make it just everybody? In other words, change the basic accounting for everybody, because it's rather than get people in and out. But would you be comfortable with if we just simply, you know, because you could have a look at. Jana was just, you know, pointing out paragraph 3, isn't it? It's a matter of judgment as to whether or not you think this applies to you. So it's kind of, that's the interpretation issue. Maybe it's a slightly looser, and we can make it available. But you know, I saw a couple of shaking heads or a few nods about whether 29 is the right answer.
Yeah, the only reason I do not believe this is an interpretation issue is that I never found anybody that had a different interpretation. So everybody agrees that's 100. This is a threshold, and especially auditors and people working in those economies. So it's so in both.
Eyes be intentioned.
Yeah, that's. I agree with you. I personally would go for it, even in a true and fair override, because I do not believe that 70% of the 3 years mean financial statement means anything. I would go for it, but people don't do.
It says it's an indicator, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It doesn't say it's. It says it's not an absolute measure. That's my memory.
Yeah.
That everyone interprets it.
Yeah, but what they say that, which includes, this is everything about interpretarian wording, which includes 100%, but include but not limited. But they say it includes. So if it includes, it means that it is a
but it says
necessary.
It's not an absolute measure, it says. But I agree, you would be a long way from 100 to
the point is, what some people say, well, you guys have 5 items.
And
there is qualitative, and then what's a numeric? Well, if they want to be qualitative, they will not add this numerical.
And the standard talks about hyperinflation, or does it just talk about inflation? 8% per year is not hyperinflation.
Sue?
Chris. So to pick up on Alan's point, we would agree, yes, there should be a long-term project and that needs to be thought about, but that's part of the conceptual framework conversation and discussion. I certainly agree with Alessandro that I think in practice everyone believes 100% is an absolute, not negotiable level. So what we were thinking was as more of a short-term fix, you might think about actually not making it mandatory to drop the threshold, but you could have it as a permitted option that countries could choose for themselves whether they thought they were at a level that actually needed that to happen. That might just give you the short-term solution.
Yeah, from an interpretation point of view, I believe that 100 is, it was, the original idea was to be a threshold because there are 4 qualitative characteristics. And then there is this 100. If ISB, ISC at the time, want to be qualitative, they never add this fifth element. So they added it for a reason.
I'm not so sure about it, but I think that's a moot point anyway. It's the way people are interpreting it, qualitative.
My point was about what we had brought forward to the IFRIC about Venezuela, where you have at least 3 different exchange rates for different industries, and it's been put on hold or on the back burner or whatever, and as far as we're aware, a number of activities are going on in Venezuela and people have a problem with that. And I don't know, it's
three exchange rate in Venezuela.
At least, but 3 definitely, yes. And the text again doesn't seem to allow people who are in the more sophisticated relationship with the state of Venezuela, and they are supposed to use 1, but that's not the sort of realistic economical one. And so they say, why should I use this exchange rate? Because I'm forced to use this exchange rate, but it doesn't do anything good to my financial statement. So
if only the problems in Venezuela could be fixed by accounting standards.
Most likely not, but those people who are active there need some help. And
Venezuela is one of the main supporters of this request.
At least we'll say, use the back market rate. Yeah.
Well, that's on your website.
First, go to the black market, and then secondly, use the rate.
Okay, we'll have to have an internal thinking about this. Thank you, Alexander.
That's it.
So, well.